The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help so you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, this is John Willis, and you're listening to Agile Uprising Podcast. Hey.
Hello. Welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. In this episode, we're sharing Agile Uprising member James Gifford's talk from Agile DC 2017. Gif suggests five metrics are important for creating safety on teams: lead time, quality, happiness, agile maturity, and business value. By focusing on these five areas, teams grow, flourish, and create a culture of continuous improvement. Another takeaway from this session was, never let James offer to drive you anywhere. Without further ado, here's James from Agile DC 2017.
All right, folks, welcome to five metrics to create safety in high-performing teams. So if you're here and you're not here to listen about metrics, you might want to run out of the room real quick before we get started. Thank you for attending this. I know it's been a long day of entertainment and education. So a metrics talk right at the end of the day, you know, that's going to wrap out, and I'm imagining about half of you asleep about three quarters of the way through. But just remember, at the end of this, there is a happy hour. So, you know, that's something to look forward to. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm James Gifford. I'm a co-founder of Lean and Agile Intelligence. It's an agile assessment product, helping to understand your agile maturity. We base all of our product sources from the actual literature, and it's fully customizable to your organization and your flavors. When I'm not doing that, I'm a full-time agile coach at NextGen Healthcare. I've been the co-chairman of the Heart of Agile Conference with Alistair Coburn for the last 3 years, and it's been a great conference to attend because it's about getting back to the basics and the grassroots of where we started out, getting back to the actual heart of agility instead of talking about certs and frameworks. And it's about getting back to what works. And the thing that I'm probably the most proud of on this whole entire slide is I'm one of the co-founders and board members of the Agile Uprising. We're an online, totally free, totally community-centered community. We have a podcast, we have a blog, we have a discourse board, which we serve as our message center, where we can collaborate with each other across the globe. While we'll all agree it's not as awesome as Slack, it still serves a lot of purpose. There's a lot of searchable content out there. There's probably a retrospective post out there that somebody put out there that literally has 45 or more retrospectives that you can run with your teams. There's a book library of people, what they're reading, what they're not reading. So check it out if you get some time. It's probably been my greatest accomplishment. Jason, who's in the audience, is one of the other co-founders. But it's probably my biggest accomplishment in the last years. So without data, you're just another person with an opinion. It's an Edward Deming quote. I believe in this. I use data to coach teams. For most of you will not know me in this room, but I used to do a lot of off-road racing. And I relied on my crew chief and the data that he could see to relay to me on how I should potentially move forward with obstacles. And in one of those scenarios, we're running a timed race, and it's a race of 15 laps in a timed circuit. And I was basically in second place, about a minute behind the leader. And the way this race worked was, is there were specific obstacles that you could take. And if you took the obstacle, you weren't assessed at a penalty point. And if you, or penalty times. And if you bypassed the obstacles, you would be, you know, assessed a penalty time. So I had set my vehicle up so that I could run some pretty nasty terrain. And I dropped into a deep mud hole, and I redlined the truck, and the radiator was plugged full of mud, and the engine started kind of misfiring, and we were having some problems. But I was still gaining lead on the leader because he couldn't take that path. And there were a couple obstacles else in there that data wise he couldn't physically do because of his setup. So my crew chief, looking at the data, looking at these trends, he says, "Look, that obstacle that you just about blew your motor up on, skip that the next turn. And the way, if you keep running this course the way that you're running it, there's a good chance you're going to overtake him because he's going to take more penalty points. His vehicle is set up for more open, wide open range running." So I followed my crew chief's direction. He had the data. He could see what kind of car pileups were in the track. I listened to that data. Ironically, I didn't win that race, though. I ended up on the roof of my vehicle. I got so confident that I had pulled into first place. I wasn't paying attention coming into a jump, and I jumped it a little too high. If the Dukes of Hazzard horn could have been blaring, I would have heard the Dixie whistle, and I would have, you know, had the Duke boys calling out "Yeehaw!" I landed, truck the front wheel snapped off. And that was the 23rd time I was ever upside down in a vehicle.
That's a lot of data.
Actually, I've been upside down 33 times in a vehicle. And so if I give you that data point as we're getting ready to leave for lunch, you guys are probably going to think you're going to drive. So that's why it's important to understand the context of our data. And as we get into what makes a good metric, we'll talk a little bit more about that. So as we get deeper into this, what are our learning objectives going to be for this session? We're going to talk about what makes a bad metric. We're going to talk about what makes a good metric. We're going to talk about what makes good slides, so we'll have to fix that one. But we want to talk about why these metrics are important. We're going to get into the five metrics that I kind of highlight in this talk. And then we're going to talk about using these metrics safely. Because metrics, when given the opportunity, will be weaponized by your organization to do all kinds of sort of bad things to the people that work for them, unless they've had a mindset shift. So what makes a bad metric? It's just convenient to capture. If we're doing Scrum, what's something that's really easy to capture? It happens every sprint. Oh, velocity and defects. But just capturing velocity and defects isn't going to give us a full picture. It's not going to end up, at the end of the day, helping us understand why a team's hit its terminal velocity. And if you were a product of at least the early 80s and 90s, you've probably seen that terrible 1994 film with Charlie Sheen, Terminal Velocity. It's linked to a person's reputation. A lot of these metrics are given to people as team goals, or you will have a say do, like my favorite in the last client we were at before I had left, was they had a say do ratio, and every team had to hit 85% of their commitment every sprint, and that was an actual yearly performance goal. And if your team couldn't deliver 85% of what it committed to all year, you basically were getting not a bonus. Leads to gaming. How often do we have the old story point? Well, how do we increase our velocity? I'm just going to inflate my estimates. It doesn't link to a strategy. So when we talk about linking to a strategy, we're talking about actually tying metrics to outcomes. Can these metrics be linked to a specific outcome that we're trying to drive our organization to? Yes, ideally we would like to deliver this software product. But hey, that's not really something that is a strategy. What's the overall strategy for this? Because I can release that product really quick and it be really bad quality and it still be on budget. or we can do it right, and we can choose to have quality, and it's going to cost a little more. You can't, when you look at the Iron Triangle, you can't have it all. Jason has the best dialogue on that, and you should hit him up after the session on what that is. It's an individual value based. So just kind of we started talking about velocity. We started talking about defects. Those are individual values. Can you really see how a team's velocity is potentially impacting quality? Probably not, because velocity is a trailing and lagging indicator. Velocity happens after the fact. Velocity is like unemployment. We cannot really affect velocity without understanding what's happening upstream. So when we talk about a leading indicator, we'll see that as what is a good metric. The economy is a leading indicator of what the unemployment rate potentially is going to be. The healthier the economy is, the better the joblessness numbers are going to be. So that kind of gets into what makes a good metric. A good metric leads to a discussion. Oftentimes, a lot of our problems with teams come because we don't have the right retrospective data. And we can't gain the right insights into what that retrospective data is. But if we had the right set of metrics coming into a retrospective, we can quantifiably start to seed discussions with the team to help them diagnose potentially what went well and what went wrong in that sprint, especially when we're tying it to something quantifiable. We need to make sure that these metrics are within the team's capabilities of influencing. If the teams can't actually influence the metrics that they are doing, that they're capable of influencing, they're not going to be happy with it. Because if I can't control it as an individual, as an employee, when I go to yearly goal setting and a boss arbitrarily gives me a goal that I know that I physically can't hit, but that's what he's driving me to, I'm less likely to be happy with that. I'm less likely to be disgruntled. Or I'm actually more likely to be disgruntled. And my overall happiness is going to go down. So if I'm giving teams metrics, I need to be able to make sure that they're able to influence them. They actually link to a strategy. We can have an overall strategy for our company as we move through an agile transformation of increasing our throughput to our customer, increasing, making the development pipeline more seamless so that we waste less time in bundling and packaging our code. Starting to look at the DevOps process. Can we have a one-button deploy? Can we have a one-button rollback? All of those things are efficient things that we can have a strategy around, and we can actually measure progress towards that strategy. It has a credible story. So just like if I said, hey guys, who wants to ride with me to lunch? I've been upside down in a car 33 times in my life. Well, most likely you guys are going to actually probably say no. But if we got into a little bit more detail in that and you actually asked me questions, I've only actually been on a highway 2 times in my life where I've been upside down in a vehicle. So that's 31 times that was off-road. There's probably, and I can tell you that it was within the last 15 years that was the last time that I was upside down on the road in the car. So giving you that that's a more credible story than I've just been upside down 33 times in my life in a vehicle. So with that kind of knowledge, maybe you would then decide that you would want to ride with me for lunch. And I haven't been pulled over in 6 years. So, and the last time I got pulled over, I got a failure to obey posted traffic signs. And it was amazing. We want to focus on trends and distributions. We don't want to focus on the outliers. When we focus on metrics, we want to look for patterns in the data and just miss the outliers. Going back to my silly analogy of the 33 times. 33 times is a big number. But what we're looking at, we're not looking at that. We want to talk about leading indicators. So when we talk about leading indicators, we're talking about, like, so we kind of brought velocity forward and the economy. The economy is the leading indicator of what joblessness is going to be. The better the economy is, the less unemployment we're going to have, And that is what is honestly going to help improve joblessness. I cannot affect joblessness without affecting the economy. So economy is the leading indicator. So what metrics should we focus on? The whole reason why you guys came. We want to talk about flow-based metrics. And we'll get into what flow-based metrics are, but flow-based metrics came out of Kanban. And when you're running an organization that may be running blended frameworks, you may have delivery teams that run Scrum, you may have delivery teams that run Kanban. If I'm going to create a metrics framework that I can see what's going on with the entire software development system, I want to focus on a common themed metric. And since Kanban doesn't necessarily prescribe you to wanting to estimate things in story points or hours or whatever, there is a common ratio that works for both Scrum and Kanban. It is the lean flow metrics. And we'll get more into detail on those. We want to focus on quality. And quality is more than just defects. And we'll get into that a little later. We want to talk about the maturity of our teams and what our organizational goals are for the agile maturity of our teams and their fluency with our principles and practices. We want to talk about teams' happiness because happy people are more engaged. And we want to just stop talking about, we all hear we want to talk about business value and delivering our customers value. But honestly, half of this room can't actually quantify what value is. So let's stop talking about value and let's talk about the outcomes that we would like to achieve and let our intelligent engineers and designers come up with a solution. Why these metrics? So when we talk about these metrics, we want to understand why this framework works together, why it's important. We're pulling in the flow-based metrics and quality to optimize delivery. We're pulling in the culture for culture and people. We want to care about our agile fluency and our maturity. We want to care about happiness. And business outcomes will help change the culture of your organization. So if we look at the Agile Manifesto, it's our highest priority to satisfy our customer through early and continuous delivery of valuable software. If the software delivery system isn't optimized, if we continuously have waste in our system, how can we continuously deliver working valuable software to our customers? Delivering working software frequently from a couple of weeks to a couple of months with the preference of a shorter time scale. Again, kind of ties right into that decreasing the amount of time it takes to get a piece of software done to help us achieve that outcome, to run that test in market so that I can find out if we're heading in the right direction with this feature. Again, coming back to focusing on an outcome. Welcome changing requirements, even late into the development. Agile processes harness change for the customer's competitive advantage. This is, again, time to market, responsiveness. Things that we're going to talk about as we start talking about those flow-based metrics and why they're important. Continuous attention to technical excellence and good design enhances agility. That screams quality to me. The signers of the manifesto wrote this directly into our principles. And you can use data to get insights into how to tune and drive these. Oh, I must be in the South again because I forgot the D in my and. It's funny, I was going to present, I had this topic was selected again for Music City Agile, and clearly I still have an updated deck. But a colleague of mine, Jess Long, was actually helping me review my slides, and she was like, "You must think you're in the South because you've dropped a D off that AN." And I'm like, "Well, honey, that was probably because I grew up near West Virginia, and I always dropped the ANs off my Ds." It wasn't until I learned proper English till I moved out to the Philadelphia area. With enough of my bashing on colloquialisms, we want to build projects around motivated individuals and give them the environment and support and trust they need to get the job done. This is probably the most absolutely most overlooked value in the Agile Manifesto. But we can, by actually having the right metrics framework, we can actually start to show and build a layer of trust based on numbers and projections and outcomes that are actually being achieved and problems that are being remediated. But we shouldn't just focus on projects. I want to build companies around motivated individuals. This is one of the things that just keeps kind of holding back our industry. It's what keeps holding back our companies. Agile processes promote sustainable development that sponsors and developers and users should be able to maintain a consistent pace indefinitely. And there's the other spelling mistake. Boy. But it is important for us to be able to create systems of work that create slack so that our development teams can learn and be educated, like so they can grow and learn. How else are you going to have that database developer learn Java? If you do not create that pace that they can start to cross-skill and move to more specializing generalists, which will in turn increase flow, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit. But simplicity is also the art of maximizing the work not done, and that is essential. And when we start to talk about business outcomes instead of velocity and things like that, we'll be able to start to see that simplicity because we'll be learning. We'll understand when we've hit that threshold and we won't need to do that $1 million death march. And the reason why that there is 5 metrics in this framework and the practices that I put together, moving one metric is easy, but moving one metric without impacting at least one is hard. Troy McGinnis delivered this in his talk at Agile 2015. Or this one was actually, no, this was actually Agile 2017. But it's because all of these metrics, we talked about gaming velocity early, and as I was kind of going through what's a bad metric, as I impact one metric in this framework, you will start to see other metrics shift. As quality starts to degrade, most likely management is going to start calling those meetings, like, why are we having so many defects? Why are we doing this? And the result of that will most likely be happiness degradation in your happiness score and metric. So when we start to talk about business outcomes, this was the paramount shift I've been working with. Before I went to NextGen, I was working with a 350-year-old financial institution. And this statement right here, delivered in a lunch and learn, was the catalyst to kind of start a revolution, to start a change in management. I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to Earth. John F. Kennedy. Kennedy wasn't out there saying, go build a rocket. He was giving people a vision. He was giving people an outcome and relying on them to solve that outcome. And the technologies that came out of that with the ceramic coatings, that basically the heat shielding that kept the space shuttle from burning up, the spacesuits, the dehydrated food, all of these advancements in science came out of this one statement because it was focused on an outcome. People are more motivated to deliver when they are given a goal, understanding why and what the value of that is, and being able to go out and deliver against that. If you work with a set of developers and you tell them, look guys, we would like to reduce our churn rate by 50% in our product, bringing the development team and the product owners or program manager or whatever you're calling that role in your organization, being able to get them to talk to some customers and understand why those churn rates are, and then allowing that development team to go out and create that solution instead of handing it to them, is what is going to drive motivated people. It's going to be what brings them to work every day because you're trusting them to solve those problems and execute on a vision. So as we transition, we're going to get more into some of the Kanban metrics. We're going to get, I've lost all track of time and I didn't start my counter. All right. So I've been at this about 20 minutes. All right. So for flow-based metrics, we're going to get into the Kanban metrics. We're going to get into lean metrics. So for those of you who have just been kind of living Scrum and haven't been exposed to the world of flow-based metrics, we're going to talk about cycle time. And what cycle time is when the clock starts when work begins on a request and ends with the item ready for delivery. So from the time that I, as a developer, pull a task or a story till the time the product owner accepts it, that's the cycle time of a story or time in process. And most likely I will refer to it as time in process. I like it better than cycle time. Most organization, most people are more widely accepted of time in process as opposed to cycle time. Throughput, so number of items that the team is capable to deliver in a given time period. So we want to understand this because just as we calculated points, we understand about how many points that we can do. We can also understand that with the count of stories or artifacts or items, whatever you're calling them in your organization, that a team can do in a fixed period of time. Similar to velocity, but it's a little bit better because it doesn't take into consideration a hokey number that potentially they guessed at. Those are true throughput numbers. And then we want to talk about lead time. So when we talk about lead time, we just transitioned from the business outcomes goal. We want to talk about lead time because this is when the clock starts and the request is made, and at the end there's delivery. So this is from the time of I'm a business person and I have an idea till the time you as a customer are actually touching that, working with it, having that product in market. So when we start to look into that flow and the data that comes out of flow-based metrics, we want to start wrapping that around the SDPI dimensions. And this is Larry, I'm going to butcher his name, but it's Larry Massaroni. He came up with this information while he was working for Rally Software in partnership with the Software Development Institute out in Pittsburgh. They came up with the Software Development Performance Index, and through a lot of his research and a lot of work by Troy McGinnis, they've put together these types of numbers. This isn't an original idea. This isn't the original James Gifford idea. This is, but so much of the Agile world is not an original idea. It's a repackaging of something that's happened in previous years. But this development index focuses on productivity, predictability, and responsiveness and quality. So kind of as we tie that back to what the manifesto was looking at, for us to really achieve what the manifesto is looking at, these types of metrics and these types of flow data tie right into that. So when we look at that, this team is very, very not predictable. You can see they're kind of all over the place. You couldn't even look at these guys from a throughput standpoint and understand really what's going on because, I mean, they're all over the place. They have 55 to 15, 48 points and 9 stories. Maybe they have some estimating problems. Maybe they get interrupted a lot. Who knows? But because I'm only looking at one set of data, I can't tell what's going on with these teams at all. How am I as a Scrum Master, how am I as an Agile coach going to help grow, change, and move these teams forward when I can't really see what's in there from one metric? So when we talk about productivity, we want to talk about what's holding us back from completing more. When we talk about productivity, it's a throughput-focused metric The goal is to reduce the deviation in throughput week over week. And it can be impacted by any of the number of things that the teams are impacting. But these are the types of things that you can start to have conversations around. So when we set a good metric, is conversation-based. Here's where I start to have conversations around these types of items. I can spot where a team's had a lot of interruptions based on these numbers, based on quality. So if we actually looked at this data, the blue number there is throughput. So that's the sum total of all the items there. This green line right here. Unfortunately, my laser pointer is deciding not to work or what. But this green line is the total number of items worked. If we can look here, of that 16, 11 of it was new functionality. 11 of it was actually stuff I planned to do. 5 of those things were defects that crept in. What I'm trying to do here from this standpoint, I'm trying to reduce the deviation in this plan. So most likely I have problems with splitting up stories into commonly sized items, or I have a lot of quality problems, or my team has a capacity that's taken away by some support task. You're not going to necessarily see that unless you're putting that in unplanned work. So that was one of the tips that we brought in for the team, was to start logging that unplanned work. So when I got pulled off to do the end of month close support that always continuously happened when a batch job would fail, and they would get pulled in to go research why a data file didn't load and then write a query for the production support team to load. We were able to actually start to see that these unplanned incidents were actually the thing that was hampering the team. But nobody was accounting for it because we didn't include it in our velocity because it wasn't new functionality. And we didn't see it come in here because nobody recorded it, but we were spending hours on it. So a quick and simple fix was to talk to the team and say, hey guys, I'm seeing this, but it's not really jiving. What's going on? And we were able to find out that they were having a problem because of the hours that were being spent on a monthly end close process. We talk about predictability. What's keeping us back from consistently delivering value to our customers? So when we talk about predictability, again, it's throughput. And the goal is to maximize the number of completed items, not starting items. There's a great thing that I post on a lot of my Scrum team's boards, and it's stop starting and start finishing. How often do you have a developer out there that's got 5 tasks going at one time and none of them's done? And they come to stand up and it's a dead, the discussion at stand up is just completely flat every day. And it's, well, I'll get to that finished tomorrow. And I'm like, why don't we just focus on that one ticket and let's figure out how to get it done. Again, these are all impacted by the same thing. Everything in our life is impacted by these common impediments. In this case, if we were in that scenario I was just talking about, it would have been a problem with work in progress. We would have too much WIP for him to actually finish anything. They weren't focusing on one item at a time. Because the overall length of time that it's taking is going to impact your throughput. So if I have a bunch of stories that are smaller or we're swarming them, so say I have something that's big and there's maybe 5 or 6 tasks and the whole team technically in the old traditional fashion would have been done the UI, we would have done the service work, we would have done the database changes and so on and tested it. We could have swarmed that and done that thing that we call, it was super big, in a really short cycle time because we all got together, we collaborated, and we focused on getting it done. So if we didn't swarm that item, it could have drug on the entire sprint, and then testing wouldn't have been able to finish it. So we would have started something that we didn't finish in the sprint. So that's how cycle time impacts.
A quick follow-up on this question. The cycle time will vary depending on the user
stories. Absolutely. Right. And so what we end up starting to see is starting to understand why and what teams, how teams are slicing stories. Ideally, we want stories to be sliced into smallest increments of value that actually deliver something to the customer. So in essence, if we're doing that, we should see relatively consistent sized stories. Or if it is a big story, how do we say everybody on this team, all hands on deck and get this done quickly? One of the teams that I was recently working with right before I left and joined NextGen, their big problem was that it didn't matter whether it was a 1-point story or a 13-point story, they all took 8 days. So it wasn't a problem with the cycle time. The stories were relatively size rate, but it was how they were attacking them. So yes, good slicing heuristics are extremely important. Neil Kielik has a great blog post out there on different ones. There's a bunch of different ways of shortening and slicing stories based on value. So the goal here, and what would I try to get teams to do, is just focus on getting things to roughly about the same size that are going to deliver value. Ideally, that they're going to be bigger. And if they're bigger, the team should understand what those tasks are and then all work on that together to kind of close that story out. So when we look at this chart, and again, this is stuff that is openly available from Troy McGinnis at the Focus Objective site. When we look at this chart is actually representative of, basically, it counts the number of items that were started versus the number of items that were finished. And after it does the math, it kind of tells you where you're at. And ideally, we want days of zero or weeks of zero. This is based on a week. And what that means is everything that we pulled that week, we finished. And the product owner was happy with it, and they signed off on it. And if you're working in a land of continuous integration or continuous deployment, hey, that's sitting out in production, ready to go. It might not be turned on, but it's ready to go. And if we can get to a state... So when we get to talking to responsiveness... Our market is shifting. How fast can we change direction? How fast can your organization change direction? The bank that I was at before this, it took an epic, which was actually a set of business outcomes. It took it 181 days from the time I pulled it till the time it got into a customer's hand. 6 months. I can only deliver every 6 months something of value to my customers. How responsive are you going to be to a changing market? Our responsiveness, it's cycle time and lead time focused. These are when we want to start focusing on that cycle time or that lead time. It can be focused on how long it takes the portfolio items to go, get through the process to an actual delivery team. So once we re-engaged with them, we took that financial institution's planning cycle from 181 days of delivery to deliver in the end. Of that, 90 plus days of that was program and product, or like basically the program level and portfolio level discussions around even what this was and what the value was. In the new world today, they can, in 42 days or less, they can have a entire portfolio program item in the hands of the development teams in 42 days or less. And that includes budgetary, financials, all the regulatory crap that has to be signed off and documented and that hampers agility. So it's important to understand what that value is and what that time is to our customer. When we look at this scatter plot, we look at the number of stories. So right now, if you look at plan versus unplanned, we have a lot of defects in here that are smattered around, which is holding back our ability to be responsive. But when you look at that, it takes us, on average, with 95% certainty, 15 days to turn something around. That means that my team, if I have something ready in the backlog, I'm 30 days before I turn around and start delivering something to the customer again. because of how responsive I am. Ideally, if we're doing things right, your responsiveness could be as low as 5 days, 6 days, 10. But it's all about right-sizing stories, having people swarm and focus on getting stuff done together, actually functioning as a team. When we talk about quality, we're talking about improving quality, you're automatically improving productivity. Another Deming quote. I go to Deming a lot because there was a lot of wise information that came out of him as he helped to work and create what the Toyota production system eventually became. As we saw in that previous chart, we had that whole smattering of defects, and our cycle time was about 15 days. If we would have removed a lot of that defect and focused on quality first, our cycle times will naturally go down. As we build more quality into our process, our ability to have more throughput and cycle time and overall our predictability, responsiveness, all of those things go up. Quality is not just about bugs and defects. Quality is about software craftsmanship. We need to build quality into our systems. And I don't go into a whole chart and show you all of the different quality metrics that could be had around this. But these quality metrics, we're looking at our development pipelines. We're looking at the DevOps process that you have in place. We're looking about test-driven development. We're looking at how many people are doing unit tests, have automated unit tests. We're looking at code coverage of unit tests. We're looking at automated testing results. And I can go on and on and on about all of these technical practices that help build quality in first. So if you can work with your management to understand anything and make an investment in anything first, invest in quality after you start getting them to focus on the outcomes. Business outcomes and quality will be the two biggest wins that you take to your organization out of this talk to help start really changing things. Agile maturity and fluency. This is near and dear to my heart because I work with a lot of teams and I want to understand where they're at and I want to understand how I can create better ways for them to learn. So Diana Larson created this maturity model. She calls it Agile Fluency. I feel that it's more about maturity, and it's a destination. And each one of these are destinations, and your organization needs to figure out what the heck it wants to do and where it needs to be. You don't need to be a 4. If all you really need to do is have a reliable development process that you can rely on. In Diana's model, when she talks about this, focusing on value or level 1 is just doing Scrum well. I can do Scrum really well. I have a product owner that plans, is empowered, that fits all of that thing that the Scrum Guide says is a great product owner. Or I have a good Kanban implementation. When you start to get to deliver value, she's talking about not having like pretty much defect-free code. You have good, solid XP practices. You can do Scrum really well. It's a combination of that. When you get into optimized value, she's talking about Spotify. She's talking about Spotify that they have mountain bets and they're talking about customers. They're focused on outcomes. They're basically ready to ship whenever the market's ready. You start getting some of that in level 2, but, and then 4 is basically a startup. And most startups end up regressing back from 4 to 3 once they start to scale. And while we tie this all together, it's about team experience. It's about mastery of agile practices. Organizations shift to the agile mindset. Here's an example of an assessment. There's a billion of them out there. You can go buy them off the shelf from the Agility Health Radar. If you want to talk to me later, I'll sell you one too. But we have an Excel I started my life out in my team coaching with an Excel sheet and a list of practices and taking some time to read the literature and actually define what the Scrum Guide was saying and how to understand how to make my teams. Because if I need to know what Scrum looks like good, what good Scrum looks like, I could tell you that I'm operating. Operating's my three. So when I'm coaching teams and conducting assessments on a quarterly or bi-monthly basis, I'm looking to try to get, if my organizational goal is a level three, or level one, I'm looking to get all my teams there and putting together the coaching plan to get them there. Final thing is happiness in the metrics framework. And when we talk about happiness, we're talking about overall people happiness. We generally gather this information through Office Vibe in retrospectives. I know Scatterspoke is getting ready to put out a great new product release that actually is going to have some really cool indicators of happiness. But we want to know how happy our people are. And there's a retrospective technique out there called the Emotional Health Check-In. And it's a simple scale of I'm happy or I'm not, and there's in between and varying degrees. But we want to know how happy our people are. This is a key indicator of how well your employee satisfaction survey is going to do. And we want to do that at the end of every sprint. When we talk about creating safety, it's a no-brainer. We don't want to put these metrics as part of their annual performance review. We want these to be at the team's discretion. I don't ever force any of this metric set on a team's on a team. But what I ask them to do is have an open mind and want to improve. And here is a bundle of tools that will help you do it. I, as your coach, am going to be monitoring this, whether you choose to use it or not. I'm still going to poke my nose in there and suggest to you, based on what I'm seeing, potentially here's something you can experiment with. And when we, and if we ever roll this up, don't ever put your names on it to the executives. We don't want them to be able to pinpoint and attack your teams. Software development is a complex adaptive system. They can become manageable and predictable with the right data. So thank you for your time. If you want to connect with me, you can find me on Twitter at TheScrimando. You can email me at james.gippert@thescrimando.com. You can find me on the Agile Uprising. You can listen to me on the podcast. You can find us at coalition.agileuprising.com. And if you're looking for a great conference about failing with Agile, check us out in Philly. More details are coming, but we're going to do a FailCon on failing with Agile. So thank you for your time. I know I ran it late.